Death Beside the Seaside by T.E. Kinsey, performed by Elizabeth Nolden. When you're packing for a holiday, even Sunday can be a source of joy. I've never been overly fond of Sundays, and I usually try to put off getting up to face the day until the last possible moment. But this Sunday, we were preparing for a week away, and I was up and doing long before my usual hour. The local birds were still mid-chorus by the time I had the range lit and the kettle on. We were going to the seaside, and I wanted everything to be ready. Notwithstanding our comparative nearness to the coast, and in spite of my repeated requests, we had spent a little over 2 years at Littleton Cotterill without once having been to the seaside. At least twice a month I suggested that we should jump into the motor car and see the sea. With the same frequency, Lady Hardcastle agreed, and then promptly did nothing about it. When challenged about this inaction in the winter, she would say, "I know I said we should, but don't you think it's just a little too cold?" In the summer, she would say, "Of course we shall. I promised, didn't I?" But some other project or obligation invariably got in the way. By the end of June 1910, I had begun to despair of ever visiting the seaside again. It came as an extremely pleasant surprise then, when one day, entirely out of the blue, Lady Hardcastle announced over breakfast that she had booked us into the Steep Holm View Hotel in Weston-super-Mare. "I know it's only Weston, and that we should probably be going somewhere scenic in Devon or Dorset, but the hotel itself comes highly recommended." "By whom?" I said. "Gertie Farley Stroud," she said. "I asked her if she knew anywhere fun to stay in Weston, and she came up with a few places. Then she called me back later in the day and said that we absolutely had to stay at the Steep Holm View. It seems someone had just recommended it to her. Less imposing than the Grand Atlantic, but a little more elegant and refined, they said. Cozy was the word she used, I believe." "I see," I said. "Will there be toffee apples? Cockles? Sticks of rock with Weston-super-Mare written all the way through?" She laughed. "There might well be, although I think sticks of rock are more of a northern thing, aren't they? Blackpool and the like. There will almost certainly be brass bands, though, as well as at least one orchestra and probably a Pierrot show. Punch and Judy, too, I shouldn't wonder."
"There's a pier, isn't there?"
"The Grand Pier, so the literature assures me.
And donkey rides?"
"Famously, donkey rides are offered on the beach at Weston,
yes."
"Then put me on the list of attendees," I said. "When do we leave?" "Monday morning," she said. It was Friday. "As a matter of interest," I said, "when did you make the booking?"
"What, dear?"
she said absently, having already picked up the Morning Post and moved on to other things. "The booking? A couple of weeks ago, I think. I thought it would be a nice surprise." For my part, I thought it would have been nice to have more than a weekend's notice of the trip, but I decided it would be churlish to say so. And so it was that Sunday, the 3rd of July, 1910, was spent in a familiar frenzy of packing. Evening dresses were selected, along with afternoon dresses, morning dresses, and a selection of outdoor clothes. The summer weather had been grey and unseasonably cool thus far, and the newspapers glumly predicted that this would continue for the foreseeable future. That the future, foreseen by the weather forecasters at the Met Office, seldom stretched beyond the coming 24 hours, didn't stop the newspapers bemoaning another lost summer. I packed mackintoshes, just in case it rained, but I decided against heavy boots and coats. It was a seaside holiday, after all, and I'd definitely be speaking up against any day trip proposals that entailed trekking in the wilderness. As usual, I was also instructed to pack watercolours and a portable easel, just in case I get the urge to paint,